You're English speaking? This, you're, no, he's not English speaking. Backside. Ours, no.
हरे कृष्णा, जिन भक्तों को हिंदी में अनुवाद की जरूरत है पीछे टेबल के पास बैठ जाएं।
So for we are reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 3. We're starting with text 191 and then we will chant text 194. Agya deha nilachale hariye gaman maje maje ase tumai diva darshan. Where's our Bengali Bimala Prasad? Where's Bimala Prasad? Vanished into outer space. Where is Keshava Balaram? Somebody better check the snoozing department. After thus instructing the devotees, the Lord asked their permission to go to Jagannath Puri. He assured them that at intervals he would come there and meet them again and again. So let's go back. Just a little review. Get an idea. So going back to 170 to get the context, Sachimata was worried that she would never see her Nimai again, that he would just vanish out of her life. She said, as far as you're concerned, you can meet with Nimai many times, somewhere else, but what is the possibility of my ever meeting him again? I shall have to remain at home. A sannyasi never returns to his home. So she's very, very worried that she will never see him again. Mother Yusachi appealed to all the devotees. So devotees are paradukaduki. They, Vaishnavas are a real devotee. A real Vaishnav is soft-hearted and merciful. And we have a choice whether we become real devotees or not. So we are supposed to become real devotees, soft-hearted, just like Prabhupada points out in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was refusing to fight, not because he was a coward, but Prabhupada, in the purport, Prabhupada specifically says, because he was soft-hearted. So if we want to actually become devotees and have something more than shadow attachment for the Lord, and the mere reflection of bhakti. I mean, the reflection is very good, you know. I mean, if you see the reflection of something beautiful in a mirror, it's very nice. You know, it's nice. But it hasn't got the same potency as the original object that is reflected. So we have a reflection of bhakti. Why? Because we have basically shadow attachment. If we had better than shadow attachment, then we would be walking about in complete ecstasy like the Acharyas, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya, you know, all the Vaishnav saints always in ecstasy, Gadadhar Pandit always in ecstasy, you know. So the merciful, so soft-hearted, we must aspire to come to that position. So Mother Sachi is appealing to the devotees, in other words, her last chance, please have mercy on me. Please arrange that I can, that my Nehemiah can be somewhere where I will at least get news of him. So it's really, I mean, she's in pain. She wants. So she appealed to all the devotees to give her this charity. As long as she, Teni Mahabubu, remained at the house of Advaitacharya, only she would supply him food. All right. But he was destined to move on. Hearing this appeal from Mother Sachi, and they had the highest regard for her. I mean, she's referred to as the mother of the universe, you know, Mother Sachi. All the devotees offered obeisances. They offered obeisances to her and said, we agree to whatever Mother Sachi desires. So she is not an ordinary, mundane mother like an average Indian mother. No way. She's the mother of the universe. She's the mother of God. So they all know this. So they offer their full Dhanava pranams to her. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw his mother's great eagerness, he became a little agitated. Well, he loves his mother, you know. Therefore, assembled all the devotees present and spoke to them. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informed them all, without your order, I tried to go to Vrindavan. There was some obstacle, however, and I had to return. Oh, this is very important. He didn't have the blessings of his mother, for starters, to go to Vrindavan. You understand? Yes, no? Blank? No? He didn't have the blessings of his mother to go to Vrindavan. She didn't want. And he says that he was not ordered by the devotees to go to Vrindavan. He tried to go and he had to return. Of course, that is when, I think this is referencing that he tried to go to Vrindavan and then Advaitacharya tricked him, and so he didn't get very far. The boat, the famous boat incident, where Advaitacharya is coming down the Ganga in the boat, Mahaprabhu says, oh, Advaitacharya, what are you doing in Vrindavan? You know, and then at some point he realized, hey, I've been tricked. You tricked me. He was very angry at Nityananda Prabhu. What is this nonsense? You tricked me, you know. Said, no, actually, because the Ganga is flowing one side of the bank and the Jumuna is flowing, we are not telling a lie. Now come take prasad. This is very ecstatic, Leela. So that's why he says there's some obstacle and I had to return. So he didn't get very far. This is very sweet. My dear friends, although I have suddenly, so he's telling, they're his devotees. He's talking to his devotees, but he's referring to them as friends. You understand? Intimacy. Personalism. They're his Saivites. For the most part, they understand he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They may sometimes forget due to Yoga Maya. Mostly they know his position, that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they are his servants. Still, they say, my dear friends, this is sweetness. Do you understand? My dear friends, although I have suddenly accepted this renounced order, I still know that I shall never be indifferent to you. Indifferent means cold, callous, not caring. You understand? You follow? You do. Good. I'll never be indifferent or cold, callous. I'll never be another word for indifferent. I'll never be unconcerned. I'll never be without care for you. This is the meaning, indifferent. My dear friends, as long as I shall remain manifest, I shall never give you up, nor shall I be able enough to give up my mother. So he wants to pacify his mother, you know. After accepting sannyas, it's not the duty of a sannyasi to remain at his birthplace encircled by relatives. Make some arrangements so I may not leave you, and at the same time, people may not blame me for remaining with relatives after taking sannyas. After hearing Lord Chaitanya's statement, all the devotees headed by Advaitacharya approached Mother Sachi. When they submitted to Lord Chaitanya's statement, Mother Sachi who is the mother of the universe, here again we see she's referred to as the mother of the universe. She began to speak. Sachimata said, "It will be great happiness to me if Nimai stays here, but at the same time, if someone blames him, it will be my great unhappiness." So she's saying, well, I wish he could stay at home. In that sense, she is a typical Mata. She doesn't want her son to leave home, run away and become a Hare Krishna. But it's all transcendental, of course. But she's at the same time, she says, but Sannyasi cannot stay at home, that's social convention, so I don't want his reputation to be spoiled. So, therefore, I'm not going to try to demand something unreasonable or something that will be harmful to my son's reputation. So she's being she's trying to harmonize. So she says, Mother Sachi said, and this consideration, this consideration is good. In my opinion, if Nimai remains at Jagannath Puri, he may not leave any one of us, at the same time can remain aloof. As this, aloof means detached or at a distance as a sannyasi. Thus both purposes are fulfilled. So for some reason, although there was the Vaishnavas were the constant traffic going between a sort of a triangle between Gaudadesh, Navadvip Dham, and all of Bengal, Vrindavan and Jagannath Puri. So it was sort of a triangle which was the route of all the Vaishnavas in those days. But in spite of the fact that it was very common for the Vaishnavas to go to Vrindavan, but Mother Sachi was not confident because Jagannath Puri was much more established than Vrindavan. We have to remember that Vrindavan was not established before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had become covered over. You understand? You understand, Omkar? Vrindavan was almost lost before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It was not a big famous place of pilgrimage. It had become covered over. All the holy places had been covered over, literally covered over. Dirt, sand, weeds, everything. So it had become more or less lost to the Vaishnavas. Except, of course, there were Brajavasis there who knew something. But even the Brajavasis, some things had been lost to their understanding. Not the average Brajavasi couldn't just walk around and tell all the holy gods and everything like that. They could not do like that in those days. Whereas Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was responsible for uncovering Vrindavan. Haribol! Kijai! Haribol! Goranga, Goranga! It was Mahaprabhu's. So I'm trying to create a context here. Try to understand. Vrindavan was lost, externally speaking. Covered over by grass and weeds and jungle and it was not known. All these places were not remembered. The holy ghats, the places of pilgrimage, the places of pastimes of Radhakrishna, all of that was not clearly understood. Except there may have been some Babajis or some Brajavasis, maybe they knew, but they were not empowered to uncover all these places, even if they had some knowledge. They were not empowered. So Mahaprabhu gave the order to the Goswamis, go to Vrindavan and excavate. The word is used, excavate. We can take that literally. Excavate, well, digging in a hole of ground is called excavating, but looking at it from another standpoint, excavate is a term that's used geologically And what do you call historians who are digging at some historical site? They're not geologists. What is the term? What is it? Huh? Okay. Yes. Jaya Shishi. Arikraman. Specifically responsible for uncovering historic sites. So the word, so the fact that the word excavate is utilized in describing the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the six Goswamis, that word excavate is significant because they are performing this role that is now in modern times used by scientists who are uncovering historic places. So it is they, the Goswamis, they went to Vrindavan and they uncovered, of course they could see by revelation, they could see all these places. However, it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself who rediscovered Radhakund. Of course you all know the story, but these stories are ever fresh. That the Prabhus, perhaps it was the Goswamis, Mahaprabhu was out in the middle of a field. And there was a marshy area, marsh, you know, sort of a small lagoon, sort of a small muddy area with a very small pond. That somehow or other Mahaprabhu discovered this small pond that in the middle of a field, you know. And he was splashing his pond and went into extreme ecstasy of Mahabhav. He's Radharani. So Radharani has discovered her pond. So that was Radhakund. So then they excavated Radhakund and reestablished Radhakund. This means literally excavating with, I don't know if they were using shovels. I mean, they must have been using shovels, you know, 500 years ago. Digging out and then immediately filled with water, and including all the sacred rivers, everything was there. And as you know, there is milk. You know that? Yes, no? You don't know? Oh, you're so many times going to Vrindavan, more purified than me, and you don't know? So much parikram. There's milk coming out of Radhakund because the oceans of the universe also invited from the ocean of milk, as far as I understand. Is it not? Milk is coming up also, along with the water. That is my understanding. Panaji? Yes? Yes. So, Mahaprabhu was splashing in total ecstasy. The devotees were wondering, what is this? It's just a mud pond. What happened? You know. So then, I suppose he was exclaiming, you know, I have found Radhakund, Radhakund, it is Radhakund, you know. So then immediately they begin excavating. The Radhakund that we see today, of course, later was excavated by a king. And at the bottom, perhaps you've seen the photograph, is that square. At the bottom of Radhakund is a square of stones that marks the spot, the original size of the Kund. And then some king developed it later. You know, I think it was a king. Yes? No? It's developed later. But Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis, they uncovered Radhakund. In this way, but my point in saying all this is that Mother Sachi was not confident in telling him to go to Vrindavan because there was not yet the established flow of pilgrims. Later, after Mahaprabhu went to Jagannath Puri, then he ordered the six Goswamis to go to Vrindavan. All the Narottam Das Thakur, later Srinivasacharya, all these great souls, they all went to Vrindavan. And many of them were ordered by their Diksha Guru to study under Jiva Goswami. So then the traffic began. then there was steady flow of devotees going to Vrindavan. But Mother Sachi was more confident because Jagannath Puri was already established place of pilgrimage and millions of people going there, and it was the what you call custom that devotees from Bengal would go to Puri. And that way her argument was, because devotees are continually going to Puri from Bengal, so then I will have news of my Nimai. This was her concern. So in my opinion, she says, if Nimai remains at Jagannath Puri, he may not leave any one of us, and at the same time can remain aloof or detached as a sannyasi. Thus both purposes are fulfilled. Since Jagannath Puri and Navadvipa are immediately related, intimately related, as if they were two rooms in the same house. Now this is very interesting. Very interesting. Sachi Mata is not, she's a Brahmani, of course, she's a Brahmin, but she's not known as a scholar exactly. But what we hear in the Shastra, all the Shastric descriptions of Navadvip Dham make it crystal clear that Navadvip Dham is non-different from Vrindavan. So somehow or other, Mother Sachi, although she's not a pundit, she understands this point. So making good argument, isn't it? Very good argument. Generally, most of the time we'll find the descriptions of Mother Sachi as if she's a very simple person, you know. Very simple person. Can't understand Nimai's strange behavior later. Not later, but I mean, when he started developing as Mahabhav and acting in very, very strange ways. Mother Sachi, certainly she could not understand his behavior. Sitting up on a tree, he'd go wearing like a, you know, like a gumsha or a dhoti, or tied as a gumsha, langi tied as a gumsha, sitting up on a tree. You know, then he would crash off the tree and fall on the ground. And he was doing all kinds of crazy things, shouting, screaming, angry at Vishnupriya. Very strange behavior. They thought he was crazy. The people were advising, your son has got some madness. Tie him up. Tie him up. Others were saying, rub Shiva oil on his head, some oil mixed with herbs. Perhaps it could restore his sanity. In this way, his behavior is very wild. He's fainting, always fainting, rolling on the ground in his home, in front of his mother. She doesn't know what to make of it. In that sense, she's completely covered by yoga maya, you know. And so making a spectacle out of himself with completely strange behavior until, so the word was out, well, Nimai, he's gone mad. And poor Mother Sachi, she's saying, oh, I lost my husband. Jagannath Mishra, he died, you know. I lost my husband. I lost my first son. He went off to Xenias. I lost my husband. I lost my first son. I only have my Nimai. Please, somebody help out. She was really in anxiety. Now my last son gone crazy. Somebody help out. So she was. The word was out in the village of Navadvip Dham, out in Mayapur. Oh, Mother Sachi's son has gone crazy. So everybody coming with their advice what to do. You see. So finally, Gadadhar, he heard about, Shivas, he heard about this. So Shivas came to see Nimai. Now Shivas tried to understand something. We don't often think about this. Shivas is, at that time, Nimai is 20 years old. Shrivas is 65. So when we look at the Panchatattva in their deity form in Mayapur, we cannot understand. Shivas looks like he is perhaps even younger than Mahaprabhu. He's 65 and Nimai is 20. Advaitacharya is older than Shrivas. Advaitacharya, some estimates are that he might have been 75. Of course, now we're used to seeing him as looking elderly, but 75? Of course, he's not an ordinary 75-year-old man walking with a cane. Forget it, you know. Advaitacharya is very virile, very, very strong. He's Mahavishnu. Appearing in an elderly body is just an act. You know, he didn't lose any Shakti. He's Mahashakti. He didn't lose any power by appearing in an elderly body whatsoever. So, because he would roar. His habit was to roar. When he'd go into deep ecstasies, he would roar, shake the whole universe with his roaring. Ah! And like great ecstasy. He started roaring around about the time that baby Nimai was born. He roared around about that time also. He had a habit of roaring from time to time. If we heard a Advaitacharya roar, it would scare us, you know. We'd be scared. at least we'd offer our Dandamat Pranams, I would imagine. But anyways, so Shivas Pandit, he heard about the so-called madness of Nimai. So he came to the house of Mother Sachi. So Nimai asks him, he was in a normal mood at the time that Shivas arrived at his house. So Nimai says, "So, what do you think about my behavior?" Because he offered obeisance. He has the highest regard for Shivas. Not just because Shivas is his elder, but because Shivas is a devotee of Vaishnava. Once again, we have to keep in context. In Navadvip, in those days, there was hardly any Vaishnavas, mostly Aparadis, mental speculators, Mayavadis, book people who were upset with the devotees, afraid that the chanting of the devotees would bring down the wrath or anger of the Kazis and all that. And they used to threaten Shrivas. Later, when the kirtan started at the house of Shrivas, they used to threaten Shrivas. "We're going to come and we're going to break your house down if you don't stop this chanting." Excuse me? So-called Brahmins were saying this? Smarter Brahmins, they were saying like that? "We're going to break your house down if you go on with this Hare Krishna chanting, because the Muslims will come and they will kill us all because of you. Now stop it." So they're making big threats. So that's why for some time, the house of Shivas, and they kept it very quiet for a while, in the beginning. Just an elite few. So Nimai asks Shivas, "So what do you think of my behavior?" You know, Shivas says, "It is glorious! It is wonderful! You are exhibiting the symptoms of love of God. The topmost level, Mahabhav. So nice! It's glorious! It's wonderful! You are genuine Vaishnava! You are going to lead all the Vaishnavas, Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai! Gauranga, Gauranga! Gauranga, Gauranga! Gauranga, Gauranga!" So Nimai says, "Well, that's great. I'm glad you approve of my ecstasies, because if you didn't approve..." Because he's a Vaishnava, he knows who he's talking to. He's talking to a Vaishnava, senior Vaishnava. There was this little club, you know, little club of Vaishnavas, and everybody else were practically, they were atheists, Paishandis, offenders. The little club consisted of Advaitacharya and also Haridas Thakur was part of that little club, little private club. And they were yearning and their hearts were breaking to see all the offenders. That's another thing. Sometimes Nimai would become very angry. Extremely angry. I'm going to kill all the offenders. You know, he would be overcome with rage. Sometimes Advaitacharya, he said like that also. He was saying, and if he couldn't get Krishna to come down, if Advaitacharya couldn't get Krishna to come down to rectify the situation, he said, then I'm going to kill all the offenders, which he could do without any problem. No problem. He's Mahavishnu. You know. So Nimai was very relieved that Srivas approved of his great moods of bhakti. So they, not just bhakti, but Mahabhav. So he was very grateful that Srivas approved. And in this way, Nimai was establishing the Sankirtan movement. He began establishing the Sankirtan movement when he closed his school. He was just a kid, you know, but he was a genius. Actually, that's one of Krishna's qualities, that he's a genius. So he was running this school, and he had students. Then, after he went to Gaya and took initiation, his behavior changed, because he received the Mahamantra. That's why he said to his Guru Maharaj, what kind of mantra you have given me? Because he's starting to be overwhelmed with ecstasies that was not previously. Before it was the proud Nimai. Very proud. You want to debate me? I challenge you. And he was going all the scholars. I challenge you. Knocking on doors. Ha! You say you're a scholar? Defeat me. Ha! See if you can do it. So he's very arrogant, actually. And then his scholar Nimai was very, very arrogant. Arrogant means, you could say, puffed up. And of course, nobody could defeat him. He was brilliant, genius. Nobody could defeat him. So he's just going knocking on doors and then saying, defeat me if you can. And he would say some shastra. And they'd be just, fool. All right, you lose. Goodbye. Next. Knock, 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 you know. And this way, and he was very, very young, you know. Genius. And he had his students, and they loved it. Yeah, go! Go, Mara! Go, go, go! Go, Nimai! Go! Yeah! Sure, knock him dead. Woohoo! You know, so they were his, really thought this was great. The way Nimai was just smashing all the scholars of Navadvip, right and left. Nobody could defeat him. He wasn't talking to any Vaishnavas. He's only all these smarter Brahmins, you know, puffed up like anything. So, but then he went to Gaya, and his external reason for going to Gaya was to take care of the last rites for his father. But that's where he met Ishwar Puri. And then Ishwar Puri initiated him into the holy name. And Ishwar Puri was empowered by his Guru Maharaj with that mood of Prem. Therefore, Nimai Pandit came back from Gaya a different person, actually. Different person. He was starting to taste the ecstasies of the holy name. He started displaying the ecstasies of the holy name, and his students, they were having, it started with, there were certain Sanskrit words. And everything he started to explain meant Krishna. They're studying. He was running a Sanskrit school. He was not running a Gurukul, Vaishnava Gurukul. He's running a Sanskrit school. And he's explaining that every word in Sanskrit means Krishna. After a while, his students are going, wait a minute. Come on, you know. You're supposed to be teaching us Sanskrit. And then all you're doing is talking about Krishna. And you say everything means Krishna. What about our studies? I mean, we're supposed to be studying Sanskrit and you're talking about Krishna. Maybe you should refund our tuition, you know, because we're not getting our money's worth, you know. So then, they didn't like all this Krishna talk. So they went to Nimai's instructor. You could say the dean of the university, so to speak. Sir, this boy, Nimai, this student of yours, he's supposed to be teaching Sanskrit, and he's going nuts. He says everything means Krishna, and I don't know, you know, I mean, that's not why we joined up with this university, you know. It's not why we joined this. We're trying to learn Sanskrit and become scholars, and he's just saying everything is Krishna. So then, Nimai's teacher, who taught him Sanskrit and all these Shastric scriptures. So then he called in, the principal, the dean is calling the professor into his office. What is this nonsense? You know, what are you doing? This is deviation. You know, this was his position, you know. And then, so Nimai felt a little sobered, a little hit by this criticism. Okay, Guruji. Okay, yeah, I can understand your point. Okay. Well, fine. I'll clean it up, don't worry. Okay, yeah. Yes. So, then he goes back to his students. And he gets back into the Sanskrit. And he's going knocking on doors again and then defeating everybody. And he's not saying anything about Krishna anymore. He's keeping it cool. And his student's saying, Jai! Great! He's back on track. Great, fantastic. Let's go. And they really liked this program of their teacher going door to door and smashing everybody. They were very proud of him. But then one day, and this is after he's been to Gaia. So it's after he's got his ecstasies, but then his Sanskrit guru is trying to put a cap on him, trying to chill him down and straighten him out. So then he tells him, hey, you know, stop this nonsense. Then Nimai says, oh, okay, Guruji, okay. And he goes back to being a strict scholar again. And they're knocking on, their program is knocking on doors. I am scholar, defeat me, you know, and then confuses them and then they're finished. But one day he knocks on the door of a great devotee. A great Vaishnava. Do you remember what is his name? What? Huh?
I can't hear the name.
You probably remember his name. I forget his name. He was a great devotee. Vaishnav, pure Vaishnav, situated in Prem. And he started reciting, when Nimai challenged him for Shastra, he didn't start reading the Vedas. He started reading Srimad Bhagavatam. He started reciting Srimad Bhagavatam shlokas. As soon as Nimai heard the Bhagavatam slokas, he lost his cool. He just fell down in ecstasy. Go on, like the mood of when Ramananda Roy or when Subdhamana Maharaj, others leader in Puri, would recite Shastra, and then Mahaprabhu would say, go on speaking to Ramananda Roy, he said like that. So hearing this great Vaishnava reciting shlokas of Srimad Bhagavatam, he burst into tears, he's experiencing uncontrolled ecstasy, and go on, tell more. So because this senior devotee was a great scholar, not in the Vedas as much as in Bhagavad. He was a Vaishnava. So Mahaprabhu then forgot all about his academic Nimai. He's not Mahaprabhu yet, he's Nimai. He forgot all about his academic pursuits. He lost interest again because reignited was that prem, Mahabhav, reignited by hearing the Bhagavatam. So then he came out of that situation once again. He could not, he could not taste any for this mundane scholarship. He lost all taste after that. He said, then he apologized to his students. He said, I'm sorry, I can't go on teaching you Sanskrit. It's not going to work, I'm very sorry. I can't do it anymore. I'll just be cheating you if I try to go on as a Sanskrit scholar, because I want to chant the holy names of the Lord. But in the meantime, somehow or other, the students, they're becoming purified from their mundane scholastic mentality. They're becoming purified by seeing the Mahabhav of Nimai. They're becoming purified. By the darshan of his Mahabhav, by the tsunami of his Mahabhav, the students are becoming purified, though before they had made complaints against them, but now the wave of Mahabhav is purifying them. So Nimai then declares, I can't go on as a Sanskrit teacher. I'm going to chant the holy names of the Lord. I'm going to associate with Vaishnavas. So I'm sorry. That's it. And the books in those days, they were the palm leaves. Stacks of palm leaves. And they were tied together with string. So he tied up his books. He said, I'm closing the school. I'm very sorry. I'm just going to chant the holy names of the Lord. I cannot teach anymore these mundane things. But his ecstasy was so great, the students said, but had become purified now. They said, and they were chanting. And he started kirtan along the banks of the Ganga. Haribab! Go Haribab! Go Haribab! Go Haribab! So the very first Sankirtan party was Nimai leading his transformed students who now desired to chant Hare Krishna. Kijai! They became Hare Krishnas. Haribab! Of course, Vrindavan Das Thakur explains that these students, that was all just under Yoga Maya. They appeared to be mundane under Yoga Maya only. Play acting. That was the script. That was the play that the Nityasiddha devotees, eternally liberated devotees, eternal associates of Mahaprabhu, some of them appeared as his students in Navadvip. So they only pretended, just like Arjuna was not actually in Mahamaya. It was play. The whole thing was play acted. So that Krishna would speak the Bhagavad Gita under Yogamaya. Arjuna was under Yogamaya. Not like us. So in this way, His eternal associates were play acting as if they were mundane students. But so they were not ordinary souls. Not ordinary souls. They were never mundane, actually. Vrindavan Das Thakur laments, due to some sins, as he's talking about in the ecstasies of the transformation of Nimai's students into devotees, chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So Vrindavan Das Thakur is lamenting, he's lamenting, due to some sins and offenses, I'm so unfortunate that I took birth later. Because he took birth after the departure of Mahaprabhu. Is it not? After departure of Mahaprabhu. So he was feeling, I'm very lowly. If only I could have been the student of Nimai, is his lamentation. So it is not an ordinary thing. So then he began the Sankirtan. That was the beginning of the Sankirtan. When it became known, news then went to Advaitacharya. See, all the devotees have been praying for Nimai. Supposing if you have a best friend, Kadamba. Supposing your best friend is a big engineering student, right? Supposing. Now you have surrendered, you've become a devotee, but your best friend, engineering student, is stuck in his ways in the university studying mundane things. What would you do? You really love him, you have compassion, but what would you do? You would pray, oh my dear Nityananda Prabhu, oh Gauranga, please make my friend into a Vaishnava, please. And so like this, somebody's materialistic then. So Nimai was famous as an arrogant scholar, but Advaitacharya Srivas, they saw him as a beautiful, he was gorgeous, golden avatar, he was still the golden avatar. Full of effulgence, brilliant genius in the Shastra, but not a devotee. So they could see his potential. On the one, so they were just thinking, if only he, Nimai, could become a Vaishnava. You see, if only Nimai could become a Vaishnava. They were praying for him. So finally news comes to them that Nimai has become a Vaishnava. Kijai! Hariba! Go Hariba! Advaitacharya roars. Ha! On the news that Nimai Pandit, who was disturbing everybody with his arrogance, has become a Vaishnava. So we'll stop there. Hariva! Gaur Hariva! Gaur Hariva! Nidai Gaur Hariva! This is a to-be-continued story. To be continued.